What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Marius, Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison? Swangles in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Hello and welcome to Macroaggressions. I am your host, Charlie Robinson. Thank you so much for checking us out. If you're watching on Iconic or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, I certainly do appreciate you checking us out. Quick word, we've got two sponsors for the show, Scribd. If you are into reading ebooks, audiobooks, magazines, you've got to check out Scribd. They have unlimited access to books, unlimited access to audiobooks from major publishers, magazines, and news, and all for $9.99 a month. You can check it out for 30 days for free. If you don't like it, just unsubscribe. Anything that supports Scribd through our link in the description box below supports the show as well. We certainly do appreciate it. And if you're like me, you are probably super into documentaries. Curiosity Stream is serving up thousands of documentaries on all sorts of topics. Want to get into JFK, interested in conspiracies, want to look at UFO documentaries, you want to go down the rabbit hole like I do all the time. I've watched everything there is to watch in documentaries on Netflix, it seems like. So you got to check out Curiosity Stream. It's $2.99 a month. That's 10 cents a day. Give me a break. This information is worth it. They have award-winning and exclusive and original documentaries. You can watch them anywhere you want, high definition quality, unlimited streaming, thousands of shows. Stream it on your laptop, your TV, your phone, your tablet, wherever you want. Sign up in the description box below. We'll put the link. Supporting Curiosity Stream also supports the show. Well, first off, I want to start by saying that I want to thank the Ikes for having me on. Jamie and David Ike, thank you so much. When I wrote my book, The Octopus of Global Control, there were two people that were very influential in me putting that book together. John Perkins, the author of Confessions of an Economic Hitman, that book changed my life, and also the work of David Icke. So to have the opportunity to be involved in some way with what David is doing is a true pleasure and a joy and humbling for me. I certainly do appreciate it. And this is the first episode, the first video episode that's going out on Iconic. And when it comes to the first person to interview, there was no doubt who it was going to be. For the last 2 years, I've been a regular guest on his show, The Kev Baker Show, on TFR Live. You can find him every single day. He's streaming on YouTube every single day. Check out his stream, which sounds really dirty and repulsive, but I promise you it's not. It's all good fun. My man, Kev Baker. How are you, Kev?
Dude, I am honored not only to be on David Icke's new network, and a big shout out to them as well, like you. Probably the biggest influence on me throughout this journey. And to be your first guest, man. I mean, we knocked it off. We kind of hit it off right from the start. And like you say, very, very honored to be here with you today. This is going to be a blast.
Likewise. Yeah. We, you know, I've been listening to you for a while. And then I remember I was working at a Starbucks, but I had my laptop. I was working from a Starbucks. And I was listening to videos while I was doing something else. And you were on with Scotty Lopez and Joe Joseph. And you guys were talking about all kinds of crazy stuff. And I was like, these are my people. And I reached out to you and I said, I've written a book. I'd love to come on your show and discuss it. Emailed right back. We set it up. And almost from the start, I got this really weird feeling like you and I were kind of separated at birth. From the smart city of Glasgow, Scotland, obviously far away from where I am in Denver, Colorado. But we like the same things. We're inspired by the same people. We're into crazy stuff. We are not afraid to go down the rabbit hole and see what might, as you said to me one time, you're so far down the rabbit hole, I can't even see your feet anymore. So, you know, and you're right behind me, of course. So it's great to have you on for a variety of reasons. But one of the topics that has been, you know, that you and I've talked about several times is this idea, this push towards the smart city. And the one of the first smart cities in the world is Glasgow. So you can tell me, not theoretically from what we read online or what we see in videos, but you can tell us with firsthand knowledge, what is going on there? What is the push and what are they trying to do to you? Because as we know, with all of these Orwellian programs that are put forth, they test it out somewhere. And then once it works, then they export it to cities after that. So what do you see? What's different these days being in a smart city? Of course, you're very smart, but this city makes you smarter, of course. But what is it that you're noticing that's a change?
People will hate me for this, but to be quite honest, life hasn't changed much. Some things have become a little more convenient because you can interact with local services, the local government, some of the amenities as well. And you can do all of that through your smartphone. You know, you can kind of, it streamlines some of the things you get up to when you go into town now. You know, you don't have to go looking for parking spaces. You go into the app on your phone. You can find one right away. And of course, these are all the good selling points, Charlie. But to be honest with you, life in general, I haven't noticed any difference whatsoever. Sure, if you go looking for it, you can see the new, really kind of high-tech cameras that are going in everywhere. Day-to-day life for me, it's just the same as living in smart Glasgow as it was in just ordinary Glasgow. And I know a lot of people are very fearful of the full 5G network and everything else, you know. I honestly don't know. And I know they've been testing it here in Glasgow. And so far, touch wood, I haven't seen any of the horror stories that maybe some people have read out there. Now, that's not to say that it's entirely safe and all the worries are misplaced. But me personally, life goes on, you know. Old meter gets swapped out for smart meters. That was a bit of a bone of contention. But I think by 2022 in Scotland, I think it's everyone's going to have one of them anyway, whether you're in a smart city or not. And if you're not in a smart city yet, I think it'll be coming to a place near you soon.
Yeah. Yeah. You and I have talked before about what's going on in China with their social credit system. It's as Orwellian and bizarre as you can get. With Shenzhen, you've got, you know, where you get on a bus and if you're smoking or chewing gum and that's illegal, the facial recognition cameras are all tied in. They map out who you are within a matter of seconds and ping your cell phone with a fine that's already been deducted out of your account. It seems to me like they're laying that seems like a version of a smart city that maybe they're trying to move towards. Is there sort of an infrastructure that's been laid? What kind of infrastructure did they put down in Glasgow to make it so-called smart? And what can we even tell what the plan is moving forward, how they're going to build off of that infrastructure?
It's quite hilarious, actually. Most of the residents of Glasgow get a good laugh at this, but we were the lucky winners of a competition that none of us even knew we had entered. That got us 24 million or 27 million pound grant to pimp out the city. And you would think they would have gone to local contractors, you know, to get the CCTV and everything else. But no, we outsourced it to Israel, of all places. Oh, phone's going, Charlie. Give me 2 seconds. I'm going to pause it here, okay? Pause your recording, actually. There we go. I'm back. Sorry about that, man.
No problem. So you won a contest that you didn't know you entered.
Yeah. So we went.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
And then they outsourced it to Israel, which is, you know, of course, right on schedule. What a surprise.
Exactly. Didn't. It's a company called Nice Security. Talk about Orwellian, right? Because there's nothing nice about it. And to be quite honest with you, it's really quite hard to find out just how far into the actual operation of the CCTV, the smart grid that we are. I know eventually there's going to be something called a persons of interest software kind of package that they'll be using. And basically, like you say, everybody's mapped bases. And for example, and the example they give you, which is one that's really hard to argue against predictably, is if you were to lose a child. Mm-hmm. Now, all you'd have to do is know the color of jacket that the child had on, something distinguishing. And from there, they reckon they'd be able to track back and trace any individual within a matter of minutes. Because most of the city is covered, there's not many blind spots, and this is the way that they sell that surveillance. It's to protect you, you know, it's to keep kids safe. But I do agree with you. I think eventually we're all going to be living under a social credit scoring system. And as opposed to what we're seeing in China, I think over here it's a, as David Icke would say, the totalitarian tiptoe, you know. It's a drip effect, really slow and incremental. And you look at what's happening on Twitter and Facebook and things, and I think they're going to really start to score us online first to test the waters, see how we feel about it, see if there's any kind of pushback. There obviously won't be. And then from there, I agree with you. I do think we're going to see dropping litter. It'll be an instant fine. Right now, we've got the silly police, as I call them, the fake police. They've got police uniforms on. They've got a different colour of check on their hat. But they just blatantly creep around, hiding behind bins and things, waiting for you to drop a cigarette end and hit you with a £70 fine. So the city will be able to do away with that job. They'll save money there. And they'll also still make the money on the back of dropping litter or antisocial behaviour. Even the lamppost, you know, they talk about how the lamppost will be able to detect if there's a gathering of a crowd, if there's any unusual activity happening in an area. And all the traffic lights, everything else all tied in with the local services, the police, the fire, the ambulance, and all of that is all integrated. So when something happens in the city, and it doesn't need somebody to phone it, if one of these detectors say, there's 10 people on that street when usually at this time of day there's an average of 3. Well, that's already going to raise a flag and you'll probably find a police patrol making its way to there. And of course, all the traffic lights will all be controlled so that they can get to the place as quickly as possible. So yeah, right now, although, you know, in opening I said it doesn't really make much change. Mm-hmm. Part of that totalitarian tiptoe, isn't it? Because before too long, we'll have gone from A to Z in little stages, and nobody will have noticed it.
Yeah, they always sell the benefits, right? Yeah. You talk about, like you said, oh, if your child gets lost, we can track back and find it. That's great.
Who the hell can argue with that? You know,
hard to argue about that. But we all know what that's really about,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
It's about tracking people and their movements and whatnot. And yeah, they've got this technology here in the United States that they put in the inner city, and it's like big microphones. And what they said is it's what we use to determine where gunshots are coming from. And they put it in the hood, you know? And so it's like, that, oh yeah, we're just trying to help the police determine where gunshots. And the people are like, get the fuck out of here with that. We know what you're doing. You're recording us. You're listening to us. You're not trying to figure out where gunshots are. Because if you cared about gunshots, first of all, the police would show up when there was a shooting, which in the hood doesn't happen all that much. And it's not like I live in the hood, but I did go to college at USC, which is in South Central Los Angeles, you know, where the riots were. I was at school there during the riots, and we watched as the police don't care. The police do not care, except to the extent that they can go in and maybe rattle somebody's cage. But as far as like showing up in a huge hurry to prevent a shooting that they, you know, might have heard through these microphones everywhere, they don't care about that. That's nonsense. That's them bugging the bugging an intersection or whatever. And now you've talked about, I mean, we know that they've got, you know, streetlights with microphones on them, streetlights with cameras on them.
I was reading a story today. It's a city down in the north of England, Leeds, and they've just installed new 5G street lighting. But also attached to that is something called a damp. And what the damp does is it collects everyone's data from in that area, from all the houses, anyone going by it. And of course, the local councillors are saying, oh, it's not to spy on you. It's nothing to do with that. There's no privacy concerns here. Don't you worry about it, you know? So, yeah, everything has been listened to. Everything's been watched. And it's not to protect us. We know that. Mm. Bull crap, you know what I mean? But I think now, can we even expect any privacy, even in our own homes, Charlie? You know,
no.
Most of us have got smart devices, we've got our phones, some people have Alexas. Why you would invite that into your house, I do not know, but it sounds really defeatist and pessimistic, yeah. But I've got no expectations of any privacy anywhere anymore.
No, I agree with you. And I if anyone's watching me, you know, through my smartphone or my... I'm liable to bore them to death, you
exactly.
know?
Exactly. Good luck to them. If that's what gets you off, crack on.
Great, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, someone's going to spy on you from your webcam when you're jerking off. It's like, well, fine, I'll dress up like Elton John, put on a fucking show. You know what I mean?
Exactly. If I knew they were watching, I would charge them. Do you know what I mean?
I'll make this guy have to go to his therapist after he sees this. You know what I mean? So, I mean, this is the deal we've made with technology too, which is we get this ability like you and I can do. We can communicate instantaneously across the world. Isn't this great? But it comes with a price. And this price is that this data is collected. There's valuable information. There's a lot of nothing in it too, of course. But how these big businesses sift through the data information, what they do with it, how they market it. Now, I have a marketing degree, so I'm fascinated by the concept of how you market more efficiently to people. How you know, whatever you're selling, whether you're selling a watch or a cup or whatever, how you're able to do it. And with technology and the accumulation of all this information, it's fascinating to me. From a marketing standpoint, and I can understand why a company like Amazon or Google or Apple or wherever, they've got access to all this data that you're leaving data trails everywhere you go, whether you're who you're talking to, how long you're talking to them, where you are, what stores you're using your credit cards in, where you're shopping, who you're, you know, what you're doing online, who you're sending emails to. There's so much valuable information in there. So on the one hand, I get it. I understand from a business standpoint why companies would want this data, why it's valuable, and what they can do with it. But when you write books about control structures, then you understand also that this is a double-edged sword, that this information can be used against you. It's cataloging everything that you do now. And of course, as you go into the future, they can retroactively look at your past. What you realize is that we're starting to really live in what George Orwell described in his book 1984. And not only are we living it, we voluntarily walked into it. Zbigniew Brzezinski wrote his book called The Technotronic Era. It talked about how we're in between two ages and that whoever is able to control this technology will be in charge of the world. And it seems to me like the United States, Israel, UK, you know, all these different countries are involved in this, but it's almost as if the major companies themselves are now surpassing governments by having the real power, because they've got all the data and all the information on everyone. It's, what is to stop Amazon and Apple and Google from, you know, taking all of your data, packaging it up, and doing unspeakable things with it? But forget privacy. Let's talk about 23andMe, you know, having your genetic data. What the hell can they do with that? You know what I mean? It seems like Orwell would have, you know, tipped his hat at what we're doing these days. We have gone way past 1984, and it seems like it's only getting worse.
I've often said that George Orwell, if you could somehow show him today's world, he would kind of look at you funny and go, right, come on. This is going too far. You know, you're pulling the piss here. This can't be true. But it is, and not only have we accepted it, you get people that queue up for like 3 days to go and buy the latest gadget. But yeah, it does everything you want it to do. How much of our lives are run via the smartphone now? But I don't think people really get it. You know, it's not for our convenience, and it's all to do with this big data. And big data, it's king nowadays. This merger of corporation and government, you know, wasn't it Mussolini that said that? That's basically the definition of fascism. So that's where we are. And myself and Joe Joseph, you mentioned him earlier, you know, we used to joke about it would be far easier when it comes election time if we had politicians like NASCAR drivers and they had on a boiler suit, you know, and it had all the companies that they were sponsored by, because in reality, that's who they represent. They don't represent us. Not at all. They work for the corporations. And how we wind this back from this point that we're at now, Charlie, I really don't know. And I can only see it getting worse before it gets better, because although at times it feels like everyone's waking up and you know, we're starting to make some ground there. You know, when you get away from the internet and you do go into the real world and you speak to people, that's far from the truth. In fact, they don't see most of the stuff that we talk about. They just do their job, you know, in the rat race, enjoy their life and have at it. You know, they're on their journey. But unless more people start to say no or just don't consent, then I really do fear for the world that your children and my child will be living in not too long from now.
Yeah, and I wish these people that were in charge of these companies were better human beings, because then it seems like maybe we would have a chance at getting, you know, have preserved some of our rights. But when you've got guys like Eric Schmidt running Google, you know, he left Alphabet after being there for, you know, whatever, 20 years or so, 15 years. And where did he go? He went to work for the Pentagon. You know, what could possibly happen there? You've got Jeff Bezos, who runs Amazon. And by all accounts, look, if you're a shareholder in Amazon, he's your guy, man. He's done a great job. He's turned this into a $1 trillion company. But he also has major deals with the Pentagon as well. And so, you know, Elon Musk, we love it. You and I talk about it. We think he's a cool dude. He's doing interesting things. He's tackling gigantic problems. He's got money tied up. You know, he's got deals with NASA, which is obviously the government. You know, and so we've got, and of course, Mark Zuckerberg at Facebook. He's got ties to the CIA. You've got Jack Dorsey at Twitter, which just kicked me off. You know, so
I'll be coming soon as well. I've been going toe to toe with the pronoun people today. So
that'll get you kicked off real fast.
Yeah.
Don't follow if you're not following their agenda. Then you get. I got thrown off for asking. I didn't even post a tweet. I just commented on someone. I said, "When are we?" It was talking about Bill Gates. I said, "When are we going to throw Bill Gates into a volcano?" That's all I said. It was a total joke. I'm not obviously going to throw him into a volcano. You've got porn on Twitter and you've got people posting tweets about like pedophilia and everything on Twitter, but I get kicked off? Get the fuck out of here with that. So anyway,
you're a marked man on social media. You have got to be the most persecuted person I know on social media.
For somebody with such a small following, I had like 1,000 people. Like, what am I doing?
And like, who am I? I mean, that's blatantly a joke. You know, even the least humorous person in the world surely can tell that you're not actually realistically talking about Bill Gates going into a volcano. It's absolutely ludicrous. It really is. And I will get kicked off at some point today, and I'll see what you make of this, and it's to the audience as well. You know, we're in Scotland right now. Something really, really disturbing has happened in the past couple of days, and we've had one of these tranny story times happening at the school. Now listen, each to their own. Have at it. I've got nothing against anybody. You're an adult, consensual, whatever you do, go get it. Go have at it. However, subjecting children to somebody called Flowjob, who is all over Twitter posing with dildos and in sexually provocative poses with their bits hanging out here and there. Well, this Flowjob was brought along to a school in Paisley, which is just near Glasgow. And it was all instigated by a member of parliament called Marie Black. Now, Marie Black herself is a strong advocate of the LGBTQABC You Have At It movement. And she has actually said that anyone who finds a problem with a Flowjob reading to kids as young as 7 years old is homophobic. Now, I don't deem it homophobic for parents to have the right to say no to their child being subjected to an individual as crass as the one that we've seen here. And the fact that she does call it homophobic, I think that kind of dilutes the actual meaning of that term, because there's people that are very homophobic out there. But to call parents who have questioned this move homophobic, I think it's utterly ridiculous. But that's the country I live in. And the SNP, the Scottish National Party, or Scottish Nonce Party, as I call them, they seem determined to absolutely destroy anything that resembles a family. They want to sexualize kids younger and younger and younger. And the first minister, Nicola Sturgeon, is somebody that early on in her political career was, let's just say, very masculine in her looks, you know, a donkey jacket, the kind of commie hat on. And She was obviously, you know, singled out though. People could tell she was going to be quite influential. She said the right things. And the SNP got together and they said, we've got one problem here. She isn't exactly family friendly. So they got in a PR guru and they said, how do we make her electable? And they said, well, basically, you need to get her married off and give her the appearance of having a family life. And the only person that she could find to marry her was her boss at the SNP, who had brought in the guru to try and make her more electable. And here she is, you know, a pure facade. Her husband's a beard, and yet she's determined to force all of this LGBT stuff and everything else on the kids when she herself can't even be honest about her own sexuality. It's a crazy wonderland, dude. Of course, me just for pointing out that, you know, it's not up to the state what our children should be subjected to, and it should be the parents that choose. Well, now I'm being attacked by the crazies on Twitter that really do think that Twitter represents what the world looks like. They think the Twitterverse is how real people think. And away from their little echo chamber on Twitter, I'm quite encouraged to see that people are absolutely outraged by this, what's happened in that school. And even people from the LGBT community are having a go at Marie Black, because I'll ask you, do you think it's homophobic to say that you don't want your child read to by somebody in a dress and drag crossing their legs and their bits hanging out, and you go on social media and It's just disgusting, dude. I've got no words. I'm struggling right now to keep the steam in my ears because it's very, very triggering to me.
Well, this show is called Macroaggression. So if there was a time to let the steam out, it would be here. No, it's not homophobic to think this. I grew up in Palm Springs, California, which has a large gay community. In my life, it's been fairly normalized. I would see it as a kid. We had people that worked at our school growing up. One guy that was this janitor, that was this really awesome guy. And one day I saw him when we pulled up alongside. He was in a convertible and he was with another guy and they were kissing. And I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't realize this guy was gay, you know? And from that point on, then, of course, I knew he was gay, but he was still an awesome guy. Nothing changed in that regard. And so I kind of learned early on that stuff, honestly, it doesn't really matter. However, exactly. there is something to be said for being age appropriate. And that's not limited to being transsexual, homosexual, or anything like that. There's some things that are not made for kids, regardless. And that's one of them. And the fact that if you protest against that, and by the way, that's happening here in the United States all the time. Story time with trannies where they're wearing skirts, nothing underneath, and they're rolling around and doing somersaults. And the kids are like, yeah, this is fun because this person looks like a clown. And the parents are mortified. And I'll tell you what, if I were a member of the LGBT community, I would be totally against this because it's discrediting them. They are serious people pushing for, you know, to be taken seriously and to be, have, you know, equal rights and all these things that they should have. And this component of their society is just buffoonish and cartoon-like. And they're not doing the cause any good by acting like this. If they want to show that transgendered people are just like everybody else, lose the costumes. Yep. You know, lose it. Like they have the gay pride parades in West Hollywood and it's just all these people out there marching and everything. And inevitably you get a dude in a leather, banana hammock and like a bondage outfit and like a leather hat. And he's walking down the street and there's all these kids and you're like, look, I understand you're gay and I understand you're proud of it and that's cool and all, but like you can't expect people to take you seriously when you're walking around in a leather thong and go-go boots and everything. Like you kind be who you are, dress how you want, you know, do all that stuff. But if somebody mocks you, you can't act surprised by it because you're kind of putting yourself in a position to have people give you a hard time. You're not really being taken seriously. And I think that forcing this on people and then demonizing the parents as being homophobic. I mean, what are we afraid of homosexuals? That's an inaccurate description of what this is. Nobody's afraid of it. They just think it's inappropriate. They're not persecuting. They're not saying that person should be put in jail. They're just saying, hey, maybe we don't do this in the public library during story hour with a bunch of 4 and 5 year olds. How about maybe you do this later? And you and I have gone down this path on Desmond the Amazing and what's going on there. That is nothing short of child abuse, what's happening there. And we've talked about Michael Alec, the guy who's behind, you know, who's involved with him, who is did 17 years in a New York State prison for murdering his drug dealer boyfriend, Angel, chopping him up, putting him in a suitcase and sending him down the Hudson River. This is not debatable. This is what happened. And that guy is running the PR and working closely with Desmond the Amazing. And then they bring him on Good Morning America and Michael Strahan's talking about how brave he is and all this stuff. And you're just, once again, back to Ike. What is it when something is nowhere and then all of a sudden it's everywhere? It's the agenda. And that's, I think, what we're seeing. So the question is, why the agenda? Why the push to normalize all of this stuff? Is it to break up the family? Is it to, look, I'm all in favor of being more inclusive and acknowledging that, like, hey, this person likes people of the same sex, or this person maybe was born transgendered, and that's got to be unbelievably confusing. And you go through high school and you feel like you don't know which locker room to go in. I can't even imagine that. That's got to be just horrendous and torturous. But
But let's have this conversation about all that stuff once people are like 18 and over. Like, do whatever you want. But like, when you're trying to, you're trying to push like hormone blockers for kids and everything. Like, I wanted to be Batman and Spider-Man when I was a kid, you know? Like, I'm really glad that my mom didn't push to have me, you know, pushed into a, you know, change my hormones and inject me with, you know, spider hormones or something to give me what I wanted when I was 7 years old. Things change. You know what I mean? Your kid wants to wear a dress and play with Barbies. All right, that's cool. But it doesn't mean you need to sign them up for sex, you know, gender reassignment surgery at 11 years old. I mean, this is barbaric and crazy.
It's quite weird because I would say, you know, LGBT, you know, compared to what it used to be like years ago, you know, decades ago. I mean, over here, Alan Turing, you know, one of the brainiest people that we've ever had, the guy that cracked the German code with the Enigma machine, he was chemically castrated because he was homosexual. That is barbaric. It's crazy. And I think we are living in a better world now where people are free to exercise, you know, their sexuality. They can be what they want. But equality is no longer equal. It's the same with Black Lives Matter and racism and things like that. You know, everyone wants to be treated the same, but it doesn't include treating other people the same. It's a weird, twisted world we're in. And, you know, why are they doing it? I really do think it boils down to the family thing again. And away from Orwell and over to Huxley and the Brave New World, I don't know, maybe a generation from now, I reckon we could probably be getting into the realms of the designer babies and you'll probably maybe have a lottery, you know, that maybe there'll be 1 month a year where so many people get a golden ticket to go and have a baby, or they get given a baby or something. I honestly don't know where this ends up, but we're on a very, very slippery slope indeed. I'm the same as you, each to their own. Have at it, crack on, you know. Yeah. But keep it away from the kids.
Yeah. And that movie Gattaca, if you ever saw that, you've got that whole thing where it's like it was Brave New World, just, you know, in movie form, where you had to have, where you picked out what your baby was going to look like. You had to have, a license in order to have a kid. And then you had to go through this lottery system and all that. That sounds insane, obviously, but think of how many things we accept as normal now that would have been, that were insane to us 2 decades or 3 decades ago. I mean, we get this incremental push towards, technology and improvements. And of course, like we said, they'll always sell it as a benefit. They say, well, why would you want to have a baby if you knew that your baby might have Down syndrome? Well, we can remove that chromosome and then you won't have these issues. And, you know, we can find out if your baby's predisposed to getting, you know, kidney disease or something, or what, we can take care of it now. Wouldn't you want to do that? And of course the answer is, well, yeah, I don't want my kid to have all these things. So if you have the technology to do that, then maybe we should consider doing that. However, it's a slippery slope. You know, CRISPR technology exists. You don't have to be some guy working out of the MIT laboratory. You can just be some jackass at home that can use this technology to start monkeying around, maybe literally monkeying around with monkeys. Yeah, next thing you know, you're building hybrid monkey pigs in your basement, you know, letting them free.
That may sound outrageous to, you know, anyone listening, although I'd imagine if you're tuned into Charlie and I, you probably get it already.
But yeah, strap in, man. You're gonna get some weirdness.
You had the chimera. I mean, I think it was literally a monkey pig, right? They crossed the monkey and the pig. And then you had that company from South Korea that were cloning domestic pets. Very good. Crack on, you know. Have at it. But then they up sticks and moved to China. Why? Because the ethical kind of concerns around human cloning aren't quite as stringent as they are in South Korea. Wait, what did you say? Human cloning? Now, it's one thing having your pet that you don't want to part with, you know, having a replica copy of it. Me, I still find that quite creepy. But humans cloning? Where the hell are we going with all this? Where does it end, dude?
I think we all owe Alex Jones an apology for making him cry. They're cloning people. They're making hybrid chimeras. And everyone's like, get the fuck out of here with that, Alex. You're out of your mind. And like, oh, maybe we owe him an apology.
I think Alex Jones has been so far ahead of the curve at times that that's what made him sound so ridiculous. But like David Icke as well, the two of them have something in common. And that is, if you give it long enough, you know, it's going to start coming up in the news that things they were saying years ago that people might have laughed and rolled their eyes at, oh, look, it's here now. These people were ahead of the curve, that's all.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And where does it end? You know, if they'll tell you now that it's like
the Georgia Guidestones, us living in perfect harmony with 500 million people, that they'll decide what they look like. And only problem is, I don't think it involves people like me and you, my friend, or anyone watching this.
No. Well, for sure they're gonna do away with all of the undesirables, the useless eaters, as Henry Kissinger once called them. By the way, how do you get to be 96 years old and still be as fat as Henry Kissinger? I rarely see that. He must be on some sort of a special diet.
He's starting to look like a clone of Jabba the Hutt that went wrong. Yeah, definitely, dude.
Yeah. So, but all these guys, there's an interesting thing that happens when we talk about Georgia Guidestones and we talk about this. Once you get to a point where you've got all the money in the world that you can never spend it, you start to want to then shape society in a way that benefits you, so you become, you got guys like Rockefeller and Rothschild and Carnegies and all of these people that have, you know, made their money, and then they start to socially engineering the world to make things work a little bit better, or, you know, whether it's your Carnegie and Rockefeller, and you set up the schooling systems to get people used to being in, you know, straight lines and classrooms and bell ringing, and, you know, then they know to move to the next class, and that's gets you ready to work in the factories or stuff like that. Or you control the education system as far as the information, like the Rockefellers did, and like Bill Gates is doing with Common Core. But you also get into this weird world of wanting to thin out the herd. Like, you feel like you are so special, and that there's all these people that are sort of keeping humanity down. So you get things like the Georgia Guidestones talking about how they want to reduce the population of the earth down to 500 million people in harmony with nature, whatever that means, which means get rid of black people, I think. And this eugenics thing starts to come up. And then you get Bill Gates, who is a prime example. He's the new Rockefeller. He's the new Carnegie. He's the new boogeyman. Because he's a nerdy guy, and he did Microsoft, and he made all this money, and he's just this harmless nerd who wants to help people with vaccines and everything. But then he goes on a TED talk and says, with cameras in his face and rolling, if we do a really good job with our vaccine program, we can lower that number, meaning global population, by about 10 or 15%. And so what he's doing is he's admitting on camera, he didn't get drunk at a bar with his friends and blurt out that he wants to remove 1 billion people from the planet. He did it on a stage with a microphone and cameras and wants this information out there. He's talking about reducing the population by 1 billion people if we do a good job with our vaccines. So what is going on with these rich guys that want to kill everybody?
I honestly go along with David Icke's kind of thinking. I think there has to be some kind of external force that these people are under the influence of. If you're Christian, you'll say they've sold their soul to the devil. It's demons. If you're of another belief system, you'll call it something else. But it's the only thing that really kind of makes sense when you look at the bigger picture, Charlie. And you know, whether they're reptilian or whatever the hell they are, I honestly do, hand on heart, believe that these people are doing the bidding for some outside force that has held this planet as a prison planet forever. I really, really do. And I'm glad that we're here on the Ike Network, and wherever people are listening to this, I know people probably, you know, they'll have heard this kind of stuff before, but it's the only thing for me that does explain it. It really is. And you've had it, Bill Gates talking about the death panels as well, getting carbon footprints down to absolutely zero. And, you know, oh, I know the death panels are a little bit controversial, but shouldn't we be thinking about, you know, maybe using the money to train more teachers instead of giving it to grandma and grandpa? And you think to yourself, wow, just wow. But then you look at his family history and things, and eugenics isn't exactly anything new. And of course, his name keeps coming up right now with everything to do with potentially something that could thin the herd, i.e. the coronavirus.
Yeah.
Now, because of his work in vaccines and everything else, his name is very much on the lips of a lot of people like me and you, when you look into the money that he put into the Purbright Institute and the work that they'd done on a very similar kind of strain of coronavirus not too long ago. And it really does make you think then. And yet, we're even talking like this, not accusing him of anything, just talking about it, we'll be deemed dangerous conspiracy theorists, you know? Oh, hang on a minute. We're not the one talking about thinning the population of the planet down by 10 or 15%, and we're dangerous.
Yeah.
Something's gone wrong somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. There's a weird thing that these guys do. They feel like they're, you know, and look, I can understand it. You become successful. You've put in the work. You see a bunch of people. You look out and you see a bunch of people doing nothing and being lazy. And, you know, if I were in Bill Gates' shoes, I might look at those people and think, like, get your act together. But it would never cross my mind to say, let's kill them all. You know what I mean? Like,
psychopathic. They are psychopaths. They truly are.
Yeah.
It's the only way to describe them when you look at the way that they do view the world.
Yeah. And
with all that money, you could actually change the world for people. You know?
For sure. Well, how about this? How about instead of killing all those people, how about you, you know, you educate them? How about you put them in a program that teaches them skills that they could use? And I mean, of course, this gets into like a big debate, but with Bill Gates's influence in Common Core, which is something that you don't have to deal with, but
we've got FlowJob.
you got your hands full with FlowJob. I got to worry about Common Core.
Well, from what I've seen on Twitter, it's barely a handful.
You don't really have your hands full. Yeah, that's maybe the problem. Yeah, FlowJob might be feeling a little bit better if she was packing a little bit more heat down there. But
exactly. Look like Shrek's thumb.
We have to worry about this education system that's been rolled out here in the U.S. is Common Core. And it is, I mean, if people are unfamiliar with what they're teaching, you got to check it out.
Two equals five, right?
What's that?
2 + 2 = 5, and it's not wrong.
Right. So, I know you're kind of kidding, but you're kind of also, it's kind of accurate as well. Yeah. Because I put quotes in the book from this teacher that was talking about, she was saying that if, you know, in particular, the comment they used was 3 × 4. 3 × 4 = 12. And she was saying, you know, I'm not even really so concerned with getting the answer right. It's more about showing your work. So if you, in Common Core, if you show your work how it works out to 11 and it's wrong, you get credit for that. If you just have memorized the tables and you put the answer is 12, you'll get docked for not showing your work. You got the answer right, but you're going to get docked for not showing your work on that. So it is incentivizing insanity. It is making it, I mean, teachers are quitting like crazy. They're just going, I'm sorry, I can't do this anymore. This is madness. I can't, you know, you can maybe get away with that in school. 3 × 4 = 11 if you, you know, with your teachers. But when you get into the real world and you're trying to pass that shit off as being legitimate, you're going to find yourself unemployed and unemployable. And maybe that's the point. Yep. Maybe that's the point of all of this is that, you know, Bill Gates didn't send his kids to public school. He sent them to private school. And private schools don't teach Common Core. Public schools do. And so maybe part of this is this class warfare where they're just going to teach one group of people the most ridiculous things that they can to dumb them down where they can't even make sense of the world anymore. And they're just going to be left out there to fend for themselves while the elites go to private schools where they don't even necessarily have to teach them, you know, fine arts and all of this advanced stuff. They just need to teach them that 3 times 4 equals 12. And those kids will be light years ahead of everybody else, because it just seems like they're intentionally screwing with the heads of these kids. And when you've got a guy who's shown a background, family background, his own personal background of being interested in eugenics, and you understand that eugenics is about taking the best in society and getting rid of everybody else, then you've got to consider that Common Core is a component of eugenics used to put these kids in a new class of citizens, which is just too fucking dumb to excel at anything in life, and therefore totally useless and liable to be thinned out of existence by eugenicists like Bill Gates.
You know what else goes along with this, I think, is the fact that, I don't know what it's like over there, but there's no losers over here now.
Right.
Okay. Everybody wins. You know, we don't want to hurt the feelings of somebody because maybe they're not quite as good at running as somebody else. And that's very well. That's all good and well, you know, cracking. But it hardly prepares you for life. And I look back at when I was younger, being smaller, you know, I did struggle at some sports to begin with. But you know what losing done for me? It made me bloody determined to get better at something.
Yeah.
And you have to face some adversity, because if you go through life and through school in a bubble where everyone's a winner and there's no losers and everything else, oh, great. But then what happens at your first job interview when there's 300 people all fighting for that same job? You know, comes a bit of a cold, hard shock when you get told no. What do you mean no? Well, you see, this is the real world, and they're not preparing them for the real world. And I kind of project forward, what's this all about? And I honestly think they just want everyone so stupid and dumbed down that we are all going to be sucking on the teat of the government. You know, we're all going to be dependent on them. And then you add in the robots as well. You know, they're going to be taking most of the jobs soon anyway. Where are people going to get their money from? Well, that's all right. You can get government handouts, basic income. You stay at home, you can finger paint and do anything you like. And listen, don't get me wrong. I think it's crap that we spend most of our living lives working for the man. But at the same time, you know, relying on government handouts, that's not the way I want to go, dude. I don't think that is going to be a good idea at all. However, I think it's coming very, very soon.
Yeah. Yeah. And I put a quote in the book from Dr. Russell Blaylock, who is a neurosurgeon, and he talks about this intentional dumbing down of society to a point where there's just a bunch of people that are just sort of mediocre at everything and kind of dependent on the government because they can't excel at anything. And then he said there's a small percentage of people that have high IQ that are all, you know, that are up above, and they can see the plan perfectly. They can see whatever, you know, how it all works out. And
I've seen a quote from Elon Musk today. Sorry for jumping in there. I'm going to butcher the quote, but the idea is right. He says, don't be worrying too much about that expensive education. I never went to Harvard, but all of my employees did.
Yep.
Do you know what I mean?
The world is run by C students, right? The people that are good at hustling, the people that know how to, you know, put a business together, and they're going to say, well, listen, like you said, I didn't go to Harvard, but I'll hire somebody that did. My lawyer went to Harvard. That's all that matters. You know, the guy that makes sure that the money is managed properly, he went there. I'm the manager of them. And it seems like, you know, there's always those people, and Elon Musk is one. Yeah, he didn't go to Harvard. He went to University of Penn. Pennsylvania, which is a really great school. It's an Ivy League school. So, you know,
he's got a really different way of him. I don't know if you've ever looked into his like private school that he runs. You ever looked into that?
No.
He started with his own children, and I love it, because basically what they do is they focus on what the child's into. Some people are practical. They like to play with nuts and bolts and all the rest of it. Fine. That's what you enjoy doing. If that's the mindset you are, nuts and bolts, stricken engines, doing whatever. And some people like to hit the books. Fine. If that's what you're into, you hit the books. And it's more tailored to the individual. And people that are around him now, I can't remember the exact number, but it was just his children that were obviously being homeschooled. But now it's an actual school, and other people are bringing their children there. And people are different, you know. And that's the beauty of being individuals. And I do think that's a really good idea. But when I was growing up, I used to think to myself, you know, a childhood should be a childhood. And those that want to go on and study further, you know, you should go to school maybe, I don't know, whenever. But not like from the age of 5 to 16, this stringent kind of disciplinarian kind of system that you go through.
Yeah.
Let people gravitate towards what they're good at, what they enjoy, and then you'll watch them excel at that. So sure. I think he's got a good idea there.
Yeah, and I think in Japan, they don't even issue grades to kids until they get into like the fourth grade or something like that.
Such
which
a
is,
different way of thinking. I looked at their mathematics one time, Charlie, and so different to the way we do things here. It's more pictorial, if I can describe it that way. When you're doing maths, it's like you draw lines and the lines intersect, and then you count the times the lines intersect and boom. And it really took me a while to get my head around it. You really need to look at it yourself, but it's just a totally different way of approaching the same thing. But once you get it, it's so simplistic. It's so straightforward.
Yeah, we have to change the way the education system is set up. Right now, it is designed, it's a one-size-fit-all program. And of course, that's insanity.
Yep.
And you wonder why kids are rebelling, and you wonder why you've got disruptive kids, and you're asking them to be, you know, sit in their desk, you know, at their desk for hours on end, and you've got them in straight lines, and you've got them, you know, there's just so many different ways you could do things better or differently, but you're punished by that. And in the United States, everything is taught to the test, you know, and especially with Common Core, they say that we teach to the test, you know, meaning it's just the test, like the ends justify the means, like the test justifies the method. So they want you to, you know, they're so busy trying to quantify levels of education by people that they miss the point, which is you're supposed to be educating these kids. And what they want to do is they just want them to regurgitate information. Of course, that goes along with what the state is all about too. And of course, just back from an anarchist convention, you know, the state is on my mind, and the state wants kids to be obedient, and they want them to know certain facts and be able to regurgitate them, because that shows that they've got the ability to follow orders and directions and replicate what they've learned, even though I don't know that the term learned would even, you know,
no,
fit in this case. So it's preparing kids for a lifetime of slavery. The way
you get rewarded for being the best repeater. And I think I'm stealing that from David as well, you know, David Icke.
Yeah.
The better you can repeat something and stick to that as stringently as you can, you know, verbatim, oh, you'll go far. Don't step off the beaten track in any way, shape, or form, or bang, you're kind of cast by the wayside. They just want you to repeat, repeat, repeat. And the better you can repeat something, the further you're going to go in life. You don't need to question it. Just repeat it. That's all.
Yeah. It seems like the best strategy we could use for kids is not to, you know, is to teach them how to think, how to question. Because that's like the whole, you know, give a man a fish, feed him for a day, teach a man to fish, feed him for a lifetime. If you teach a kid how to learn and you teach them how to question things, you will find that they will be able to teach themselves amazing things. But schools don't want kids questioning things, because if you've got a bunch of kids questioning the way you're doing things, you're never going to get anywhere. So they want everybody to just shut the hell up, do what they're told. This is what we're doing. This is how we're going to measure it. And if you've got some kid who's sitting in the corner with his finger up his nose because he's bored to death, maybe that kid's a great piano player and he just doesn't know it yet. Maybe he's going to be an amazing artist, but he just zones out in math because he doesn't it doesn't connect with him. Now, I understand you need math in life. You know, you want to figure, you want to count your money and figure things out. You need a certain level of math. But let's be honest here. Not everybody is going to excel in calculus. And just because a kid doesn't figure that out doesn't mean the kid is stupid. Of course, when you do standardized testing, they'll just look at that and they'll say, oh, he's really low in that department, therefore goodbye, where he could have been high in, you know, he could be just one of these kids that's, you know, a hustler, or a kid who you know, is socially active and he's friends with everybody. And that doesn't really transfer into the classroom. It doesn't, you can't quantify that in a test. And so therefore people say, well, this kid's got a learning disability. It's like, well, he doesn't have a learning disability. He's got a problem with the information. The information is boring to this kid and he's interested in other things. And so if Elon Musk, who obviously sees the world a very, you know, very differently than most people, for him to sort of put this together for his kids, you know how that, where this is going to go. He's going to launch his own school and it's probably going to be really successful. And it's probably going to be a version of school that is what we need more than anything.
I would love to have given Kevin the opportunity to go to a school where it's more like what Musk is talking about.
Yeah.
He's more hands-on than academic, if you know what I mean.
Right.
And everyone's different. That's the thing. Everyone is unique and they don't tailor for that at all. You go in one end and you come out the other. And like we said, the better you are at repeating what you're told, the further you go. The rest of you, to hell with you, you know? Yeah. Just cast by the wayside.
Yeah, I've got a college degree. Does that mean I'm smart? I can't fix my engine in my car. I can take it to a mechanic who doesn't have a college degree, and it's like magic for me to exactly. Watch what that guy does to my car. He'd get in there and fix it, and I'm like, okay, so we go for a job interview, and you're trying to, you know... What am I a better candidate because I'm smarter because I have a college degree? I know a lot of people with college degrees that are morons, and I know a lot of people without them that are really bright. And so this one size fits all way of looking at education or knowledge or you know brain power is very limiting. But of course, what should we expect when the people that have a vested interest in keeping us all limited are the ones that are in charge of making the rules and setting up society in this way? It seems like a backwards way of doing things, which is of course why we're doing it in America.
Something has to change, you know, because again, I don't know what it's like over in your country, but over here, it's hard to put your finger on why, but there's so many young people that are either depressed or, dare I say it, they actually go on to take their own lives now.
Yeah,
I think social media plays a hell of a lot into that. And at the same time, I'm not some censorship Nazi. I'm not telling you like it should be banned or anything like that, but personal responsibility, you know. But somewhere down the line, something's gone wrong. Your childhood should be the happiest years of your life before you enter this crazy rat race and you're paying bills and doing all the rest of it. But our young people today are, sad to say, but a lot of them are broken, man, and I don't know what it is. They're just a product of the system.
Yeah.
And it's like almost nobody wants to talk about it. You know, nobody wants to try and get to the root of the problem. And I get it. Some people, you know, it might be a family thing, whatever. But whatever the hell it bloody is, it's off the scale. It's crazy. It's infuriating. And I grew up in a really small village, Charlie. You're talking about less than 1,000 people. Mm-hmm. And statistically, the amount of suicides in, say, under 20-year-olds up there, mm-hmm. It's a statistical anomaly. It truly is. And you're living by Loch Ness. It's an idyllic part of the world. There's everything to look forward to. But yet, there's obviously not. There's something going wrong somewhere. Yeah. And I think we should be fixing things like that before, you know, introducing blowjob into the schools to read out stories.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we're getting...
man.
The kids are getting it from every direction. They're getting it in GMO foods. They're getting it in poisonous vaccines. They're getting it in drinking water with fluoride and toothpaste with fluoride in it, which is chemically dumbing them down. They're getting sprayed with with God knows what in our air. There's chemicals and plastics and in the cans that our food comes in. And I mean, it's like, it's a wonder that we're able to think at all, you know, and there's hormone disruptors in these chemicals. And so you've got this whole new generation of soy boys, which, you know, we kind of goof on and everything, but there's a disproportionate number of guys these days that are very effeminate. And I'm not totally convinced that it's environment or societal, that I think it might actually be chemical, that it might have been something that over the years, just, you know, growing up in this environment.
Charlie, even the frogs are turning gay, man.
The frogs are turning gay. We're going to get them. They're trying to make our frogs gay in Texas. We can't have that.
You know, he gets slaughtered for that. But he's right.
He's right. Once again, we got to go.
You know?
I'm going to send Alex a card today. I'm going to send him an apology card. And so I'm sorry. I'm sorry for making fun of you, Alex, for when you said that you're turning frogs gay.
I get slaughtered because I'm not one of these people that like openly hates them online, but then secretly watches them.
Right.
I openly admit I'm still a big Jones fanboy.
Yeah.
You know, I remember hearing him on a radio show over here when I was just starting to realize, shit, this world isn't the way I think it is. Mm-hmm. And then on comes this crazy, bombastic Texan about 3 a.m. in the morning. I'm like, what the fuck has just hit me here? I mean, you didn't hear anything like this on British radio, dude. And there was a warning before he came on. Hold on, folks, you know, turn your dial down. You know, this guy is loud. And he comes on, he's shouting about 9/11, and I'm thinking, at last, this guy gets it. Do you know what I mean? And I still watch him to this day, and I think, you know, the world needs people like Alex Jones, it needs people like us, because if it wasn't for people like Jones, Ike, you know, people like us trying to raise the alarm, where on earth's name would we be? You know, if there had never been this awakening, albeit it's not exactly the majority of people, how far into their agenda would they be by now?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I know, look, Alex takes a lot of heat for being a crazy person. And I think part of this is, you know, I think on some level he's playing a character
and he loves it.
And he loves it, you know, and he's talking about, you know, 70% stuff that's real and 30% stuff that are, you know, the voices in his head are telling him. But listen, I'm like you. I got to give him a certain amount of credit for being right on some issues and from waking me up to certain things. Now then, it was up to me to then take that information and go and seek out additional information. And if everything you believe in life is coming from Alex Jones, that's probably not the best place to come from, because some of what he's, you know, he's also putting on a show. He's doing this hours and hours a day. And so there's certain level of showmanship in this. But take that out of the equation. And some of what he's been talking about for a long, long time, he was ahead of the game. And he was talking about things that turned out to be real. And we have to give him credit on, you know, for that. I'll give anybody credit. If they're right, they're right. I'll give them credit. If it's somebody I disagree with on everything, but they've got one component of their story that is right, listen, I'll admit that they're right. And some of this stuff, I don't want to be right. I don't want him to have been right about, but unfortunately he was. I know that he, you know, when he snuck into Bohemian Grove and he exposed all this stuff, it was one of those things that was like very juicy, you know, you're very interested in like, what is going on here? This is fascinating. And so you can really kind of get behind that. But then, you know, then you become a big operation like he is. And then you have to wonder like, well, who's influencing him? You know, when he said, you know, we got all these problems, it's the Chi-Coms doing it. And you're like, I don't know if I would go with Chi-Coms. I think I might go with Israel on this particular topic, you know, as being the big problem. And if you don't see that, then are you being influenced by them? Are you saying that you're, you know, are you telling everybody it's China when it's really somebody else? So then you have to worry about, you know, what level of compromise is he, you know, so all these things, you know, work to sort of run through your head when you're assessing whether or not what he's saying is true or not. But we have to give him credit for being right on a variety of topics, things that he was like 10 years in advance of. So we love you, Alex. We just
we do love
you're a little off.
And I think you'll probably have noticed this. You'll notice this now that you're doing your own podcast, you know. People want to be given the information. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they don't want to go and check for themselves, though. And I make a point to the point of being tediously boring about it. That all I do is provide an opinion. I give them the information. And what they do with it from there, that's on them.
Yeah,
you can't expect a David Icke. You can't expect an Alex Jones, Charlie Robinson, anyone. You can't get to the point where you're just going to them and they're going to do it all for you. You got to play your part in this game as well. You know, yeah. And like you say, you know, I learned after a while that you really had to go and check most stuff that Alex was saying. 9 times out of 10, he's right. But it really kind of smacks me about the face when I realize that people out there, they say they're awake and everything else, and that's all fine and dandy. But you can't fall into this kind of position where you're just getting all of your information from one person or two people. Personal responsibility, like everything in life, you have to do the work yourself. Don't trust anyone. We get it wrong. We're humans, you know?
Yeah.
And half the time, my opinions on things, they may be a little skewed. And I know that sometimes I've put stuff out there that's panned out to be absolutely wrong. But it's a learning process and we're always learning. And you can't rely on somebody else to do that hard work for you. And whether it's buying the books of David Icke or just going on various searches yourself for information, you have to put the time in. The individual has to do it. And everyone's going to end up with their own version of events and how the world works. I think we can all agree. The world certainly isn't the place that we were taught in one of those schools that we were talking about earlier on. And I just kind of, sometimes I find it quite annoying, you know, that people, that they come, they'll listen to people like us, they'll listen to others, but they're not willing to go and then check it and verify it and come up with their own opinions. It's almost as if, you know, they're being programmed by us. It's a really weird place we're in right now. I don't know if it's the internet that's done it. I don't know what's done it. And for a long, long time, you know, I was this kind of guy, oh, you know, it's okay to have your own opinion. Even if, like, in flat earth, you know, I went through a long period of saying, well, you know, you're entitled to your opinion and that's fine, but I disagree. No, you're fucking stupid. You need to tell people. Look, something's absolutely wrong. This is what caused the problem. We were all far too nice at the start. Same as that QAnon bollocks as well. Mm-hmm. You know, something the government, folks, the government, some nameless, faceless person in the government is not going to ride in as your savior.
No.
The most important person in this game is you. Yeah. And that's, you know, that's how I've kind of changed my attitude in the past 6 months or so. No more Mr. Nice Guy when it comes to stupidity, because it only encourages it.
That's funny. And you've always been very measured in your approach. You know, when you're talking about controversial topics, you're very thoughtful about it. And you take the position of, you know, you're trying to figure this out. You're not trying to tell everybody that you have, that you know exactly how this works. It's a collaborative effort as far as trying to dig into this information. It requires everybody. Like you said, there's a tendency for people to sort of sit back and wait for someone else to do all the heavy lifting. But that's the fun part, that digging into these things on your own, it's not work. It's interesting. If you're into this stuff like I am, if you're like a documentary geek, you're just watching all of these things, this is the fun part. But it gets you thinking about things a little differently. But then you have a responsibility, you meaning the viewing public or the listening public, we have a responsibility to dig into this stuff for yourself. Don't take our word for it. I mean, we've looked into these things. We think we're right. Obviously, we wouldn't be talking about things if we thought we were wrong. But it's just the fact that we're going to be wrong. We're going to get some of these things incorrect. We're going up against professional disinformation agents and the CIA and the MI6 and Mossad and all these places that have a vested interest in keeping us on the wrong path. And so the fact that we figure anything out is a miracle, but it's okay if people are wondering about how you talk to your friends and family about this stuff without sounding like an unhinged lunatic. Look, you're going to probably at some point, you're going to have that problem. But if you're talking about these things, it's because they must feel important to you. They feel important to me. Am I going to change the world? I don't think so, but I'm certainly going to give it a shot because at least then my conscience is clear that I tried. I tried to do something. And this tendency for people to sort of sit back and just consume this information, I get it. That's how it starts off. You start off by just sort of taking it all in, but then at some point, the impetus for me writing my book was a conversation I had with my mom where she said, "You have all this information, what are you going to do with it?" And it never crossed my mind that I had to do anything with it. And then after that conversation, then I thought, well, what will I do with it? And so somebody that's listening to this is going to be, is going to click off when we're done and they're going to go about their way and they've got information in their head. What are you going to do with it? What are you going to do to make this world better? Maybe you're somebody that's a musician and you're going to write songs about it. Maybe you're going to be like a controversial songwriter who writes about, like Rage Against the Machine type stuff. Maybe you're an artist. I was just at an Acapulco. I was with this guy named Johnny Dollar, who I met last year. He's an artist that focuses on cryptocurrency artwork and anti-government, anti-establishment artwork. And it is phenomenal. It's like Banksy type stuff. And he was just trying to figure out where he fit in this whole thing, how he's going to play his role in changing the world. And he's going to do it through his art. So we've all got skills. We all can do something. It's sort of up to us to go out there into the world, take this information, use it to make it a better place, inform your friends, family. Don't do it the way I did it on Thanksgiving years ago, where you bring up 9/11 and everybody winds up hating you at the table.
It's funny you mentioned the way that you wrote the book, because you opened the show correctly by saying, right from the start, we clicked, that there was like a kind of connection there.
Yeah.
But it came to me when I was like watching the chemtrails and really, that phase you go through when you're truth vomiting over people, you're shouting at them. And
yeah.
At one point, my mum and my stepdad said to me, "Kev, this is brilliant. But what the hell is it all about? I mean, what for? Why? What are you going to do with all of this?" And it wasn't long after that I started out down the radio road. So again, another synchronicity. That's why I laughed there when you were talking about the impetus for writing the book. The same with me, dude. Somebody said to me, "Well, that's all really great, but so what? What are you going to do with it now?" I'm not a book writer. I'm a talker. So that's what I'd done. And anyone out there, we've all got our own skills, like Charlie says. And me and Charlie are no better than anyone else. We just do what we do. And so can you do something,
Yeah. And congratulations to you on your 6-year anniversary of the Kev Baker Show. You can find it on Truth Frequency Radio, TFR Live. You can find him on YouTube. You can find him on Twitter for about another 3 hours.
I got an email when we were on the show there, so I imagine that's me told persona non grata.
Bye-bye. Yeah, so long. Kev, I love you like a brother. Thank you so much for coming on my first episode. I couldn't think of having anybody else on but you, so thanks so much.
I can't think of somebody better to be entering the arena, and I'm proud to be in the trench beside you, brother. Welcome to the madhouse, man. I'm telling you, all downhill from here.
Thank you so much. Thanks, everybody. If you want information about the show, you can go to my website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. The books are available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble in paperback form. And if you like the digital version, you can get that at my website. Just donate $10 or more to PayPal, and I will send you a PDF and an EPUB version of the book. And I encourage you to share it with your friends and family. Get the word out there. Thanks, everybody. Take care.